It's the Tiltcast, episode 575. Always have a plan B.
And this week, guys, we talk Pacific Drive, Helldivers 2, Nightingale, and Last Epoch. Stand to
when shit goes wrong.
Just opening all the cans.
A plethora of cans.
Yes. It's the Tiltcast. We're back after 2 weeks of being away. Oof. It is Saturday, February 24th at a balmy 69 degrees here in the Centerlands.
Nice.
I'm Nas.
I'm Jason.
I'm Rusty, and it's definitely cooler up north.
And with the three of us, you're going to get about 30 minutes of bullshit.
Bullshit.
Some games, some news. It has been a minute.
69 degrees?
Yeah. Damn. 70 now.
Jesus. That's like spring.
I know. So if we get started so I can get another walk in today, because, you know, it's February and it's 70 degrees.
It's 31 degrees up north. It's still technically like freezing up here.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. It'll be 85 on Tuesday.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And then 49 on Wednesday.
What? A 49 on Wednesday?
Yeah.
Oh, but well, you know, it's Oklahoma gonna be, and it's like bipolar freaking mood swings.
Yeah. It'll be warm again a few days after that. 65, 74, 76, 73. Yeah. It's it's just early spring.
Dude, we hit 83 on Wednesday this week.
That's nuts.
Yeah, I've been just in shorts and t-shirts like this whole time.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I don't miss that. I like the cool weather though. I mean, I like that feeling. Like, I like hoodie weather, and it's starting to die on me.
It don't make sense to wear a hoodie here. Like, you wear a hoodie for like days out of the year. If you're cold-natured at all.
Well, I mean, at least, you know, 5-6 years ago, you know, we had a lot of years there where you at least had a good, solid month and a half, almost 2 months of solid hoodie weather and a couple weeks worth of heavy jacket weather, right? Like,
I just about never break out my super coat unless it's...
But, like, the last 5 years, no. No.
Well, I mean, I always wore a hoodie during the wintertime because wintertime, with the exception of the wind, that's the only difference in Oklahoma is the wind. Like, hoodies do not stop wind. It's just, they're terrible for it. But for, you know, everything else, I was like, oh, wintertime is hoodie time, because that's all you need. At least that's all I needed.
I mean,
walking around in shorts and a hoodie, you know?
I know a lot of people around here that are pretty warm natured that wear hoodies a lot, and I just can't do it. And my house is usually about 69 to 70 degrees year round. And I'm wearing shorts till it's about 45, so.
The
hoodie's like
place,
50 and under is hoodie weather to me.
Yeah, outside of our obviously cold days where it's gone below the mid-40s outside and there's been wind, the only place I've had to wear a hoodie is in my office, because my actual office has a quarter server rack in it. So we keep that bitch at like 66 degrees. And, you know, when you're just sitting stationary, sometimes a light hoodie is needed when the AC kicks on.
That sounds divine. Can you
put me in
a freaking...
Oh, it is. It's absolutely great.
Oh, could you put me in a server room? That makes me... Yeah, that's like home.
Well, the thing is, it's not even a server room. Like, it's my actual office. But because my office is like the ops station.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. There's this like mini quarter server rack
And you just got to keep her cool.
With a couple of servers and a wall of 65-inch TVs.
Well,
and all of it has to be kept relatively cool.
Well, yeah. You imagine, like, if you're sitting there in front of a bunch of these monitors, like a wall full of monitors, right? It puts off a lot of heat. So, I mean, still, I would appreciate it.
My OLED puts off a decent. I would
appreciate a 66 degree working environment. I'm okay with that.
I would say my OLED puts off a decent amount of heat.
Mm-hmm. If you hear some background noise, it's because there's construction going on immediately above my head. Yeah. So, I apologize.
Yeah, and of course we have like the server rack that's in my office space that me and one other guy share. There's like the server is like from 2017, so it's not exactly like the most heat efficient.
2017. Poor child.
Because all it does is drive the TVs and the different analytics software, right?
Okay.
So it doesn't need to be newer and greater. But that thing throws off more heat.
It's like, more about the fans. Like, I understand it put off, you know, it'll put off heat depending on how hard it's working, right? But like, depending on what kind of server it is and what kind of fans it's got in it, that thing can scream like a demon, or it could it could be quiet as a mouse. It just depends.
Oh yeah, well, and it's fairly quiet, right? Because you can't put like so it's not like a 1U, it's like a 3U server rack.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had to fit regular PC fans in it to keep it from sounding like a jet airplane,
right? Well, because
it's an office space and we take calls, right?
Okay, all right, cool.
So because of that, I mean, all servers throw off heat, but because of that, there's far more heat saturation, and the video card and the CPU in there get much closer to their max temps than like in a normal server setting.
I call those sandwich warmers.
Exactly.
I mean, you just put your lunch on it, let it roast for, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes, and yeah, you've got yourself a grilled cheese sandwich afterwards.
Yeah. So this thing generates enough heat that the building had to put a AC unit from a hospital room.
Oh yeah,
from the hospital in the other tower. In our office, so we could keep the room cool.
Oh wow, yeah, that'll do it.
Otherwise,
I mean, we have an industrial chiller, so.
The regular AC system was struggling to keep the room at 80.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so God. Years ago, they installed this thing, and we keep it between 68 and 66, and that's where it sits. Like, it deviates by 2 degrees.
Oh, that sounds beautiful. That would be perfect.
It's great. Everybody else in the office walks into our office and goes, "It's cold in here."
Yeah. And I love it.
Yeah, we wouldn't be anywhere else.
That's like indoor hoodie weather all year round. And then, you know, because I know what Oklahoma's like in the summertime. There's like a 40 or 50 degree delta going outside.
Yeah, that's about right. It's
but like the hoodie's only needed like whenever the sun's not directly on the windows to the office space.
Right.
Yeah. When the sun's there, it's like fully heat penetrated. So, you know.
Yeah.
It's 66, but you're like, dang, I could be wearing shorts and be even more comfortable.
I mean, that's why that's why I like IT. We can dress however we like. As long as we keep the computers running, they don't care what we look like. The boss runs around in shorts and shorts, socks and sandals sometimes. And
So Rusty, I have to ask, because it's been out there for a couple weeks now. What? Have you ended up breaking down and watching the new live action Last Airbender series on Netflix yet?
No. No. I have not, because A, I don't subscribe to Netflix personally. And B, I would never. Is it bad or is it good? The movie is bad.
But so I've watched it with the kids, and it's everything we hoped the movie would be.
Okay. All right. So to basically just tell M. Night Shyamalan just to never make another movie ever again, and everything should just be a Netflix special.
Yeah, Shyamalama Ding Dong just needs to stick to horror movies and keep his hands out of everything else.
It's weird. Like, why would he do that?
Because, I mean, let's face it, the Unbreakable series, that shit's good. Well, you can keep making that shit.
Okay.
Stay out of everything else.
I'm so lost.
Yeah.
You've not watched M. Night's movies?
It's been a while. I can't even remember the last one.
The Happening, which was Killer Wind?
I just remember what a twist.
The Village.
That was ridiculous.
Yeah, the village is kinda eh.
I mean, it's so bad that I have erased some, most of his movies from my mind.
He's made a career out of the what a twist thing that you just expect it, and then it's just out of left field, and it's dumb most of the time. It's like he builds the movie around the twist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Didn't he do the movie about the aliens that were not allergic, but like could not deal with water?
Yeah, Signs.
Yeah, that movie's ridiculous. And I saw that at a drive-thru. I remember seeing it, and I was like, really? And at the time, I wasn't driving, and so I just, like, loaded up on, like, six more beers. I was like, this is so dumb. I need something out of this night.
That sounds about like an M. Night movie. It's just like, this is dumb. I'm going to drink.
Right.
But, oof. I mean, then he also made The Sixth Sense.
Okay,
Unbreakable, but Split, Glass.
Okay, but The Sixth Sense was exactly the only good one. It was just the twist.
Yeah, but The Sixth Sense was the only one that I think was good. I genuinely liked that movie, and I forgot he did it.
Four movies are good. The rest of them, eh.
The twist on was like,
yeah, that one's kind of dumb. That was like when he was starting to get worse.
What? Yeah, it's all right. See, the thing about Unbreakable is it took that idea of of the superhero in a in basically like a real world setting, and it had this thing about the bad guy who just like does not seem like the bad guy until the twist happens because M. Night. But yeah, that's the bad guy is, the good guy turns out to be the bad guy all along. So, right. That's Unbreakable. Goodbye. I don't do movies. I really don't. I leave that to a completely different podcast that does it way, way better than I do. I do video games, though. That is a thing that I do.
That is a thing you do. It's a thing you and Justin have been trying to do off and on for the last 2 weeks.
Well, you know, it's been a journey. Because, I mean, there's been a couple games that, you know, that we've been, you know, really trying to get into. One of them, Justin, I guess we could just start right into the fucking video games because, why not?
Yeah, why not? It's what this is. It's a video game podcast.
Yeah. That thing that we do. So Helldivers exists. Helldivers 2 exists, actually. And that game has been, it's been actually kind of crazy how popular it's gotten over the last couple weeks. Because I remember, like, we started playing it in the first week, like the release week, right? And it was, like, we had a good experience for the first few days. No problems getting in, not really anything in the way of, like, server load. There was still some problems with, like, matchmaking and a couple weird crashes, but I mean, for the most part, we were playing it. We enjoyed the fuck out of it, and we want more, kill more bugs, right? And then that weekend happened.
Right. the weekend
after launch.
Yeah. The nice thing is that my girlfriend wanted to come here that weekend, so I didn't experience any of that. I was like, I stopped playing on Thursday, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Or Sunday, a little bit of Monday, we hung out.
Mm-hmm.
And then you came back. I was like, oh, I want to play some Helldivers. You're like, yeah, it's not working.
Yeah, no, I said there's good luck. You can't get in. There was some pretty big issues, with Helldivers' initial weekend. It was so bad that the development team were like, we're just going to like do a 50% more like an EXP weekend because they initially thought that the rewards weren't kicking in. Like you weren't getting medals, you weren't getting your requisition slips. And it was just like, oh, but the XP system works. So we're just going to bring up a 1.5x weekend. Right.
Right.
And that made the problem worse because anybody and everybody was starting to get into the hype cycle of this game that just was not on anybody's radars. It got recommended to a bunch of different people. You can't get into the game. The servers were at capacity. Please try again later. The game, and then it became black screen the game, which was really unfortunate because when you loaded the game up, it didn't even get to the splash screens or the opening cinematic. You just sat there and looked at a black screen like I did for 2 hours because I was expecting something to happen. It got pretty crazy. A lot of shit was broken with it because They started to peak at like 400, then it went up to 450,000. It was hovering close to like 500,000 for a while. I forget exactly what the stats were, over that weekend.
They have upped the limit to 750,000 concurrent players.
Yeah, but that happened like yesterday.
I haven't tried playing yesterday. I was playing something else.
Well, and the amazing part is, despite this, it is still the best-selling game in Europe the last 2 weeks running.
Right, and it was topping the Steam charts. Like it
still is.
Everybody down.
It's
topping the Steam charts.
Number three it's played still, right now.
Yeah,
at this moment,
over 458,000.
Yeah, so it's. That's the thing. The original game, Helldivers was like it never got that popular. They were not expecting this much in this game. Like, they weren't expecting this many people to beat the shit out of their servers.
I think they're expecting like 100,000 between PC and PS5.
I think they were, you know, probably somewhere in the, you know, in that range. But yeah, there's the whole crossplay thing with PC and PlayStation. It got to a point where people were buying the game, you know, because it was, you know, they knew that the game would end up getting fixed, and it's just, they were just beating down the servers. Well, there was also another problem. Somewhere along the line, players had learned that there wasn't an auto-kick feature in the game.
They did implement a 15-minute AFK timer, too.
Right, right. But people who were able to get in never left. And that made the problem worse for any new people trying to get into the game because, you know, there's a bunch of basically dead accounts out there holding spots. It was weird, but they got that fixed, added the 15-minute, timer. The day after they did that, I fired it up just to see if that made a change. It was like instant on. I was able to get in with no problems. And then after that, they upgraded, the server capacity. So I'm thinking that they've got this under control now. It took them a bit longer than most people expect because
I've been jonesing to play for so long that I'm trying to decide, do I want to play Helldivers tonight or go out?
Jesus. Go out, experience life. but it's a good game. Like from a review standpoint, I have to stand back and I have to take a look at this game and say, is it actually that great? And I'll tell you,
it actually is.
It's fun.
I can tell you, this past week, it surpassed Call of Duty and Fortnite for concurrent players in the U.S. this week.
Yeah, it's fun. It is a fun-ass game. Like, getting, having those moments, those situations that you have, in Helldivers 2, where fucking bugs are coming from every direction, and you and possibly three other random people who are barely ever on comms are trying to fucking hand signal out what the fuck to do, and, odd shit happens. Like, you end up throwing a fucking an airstrike, what you think is going to be over your buddy's head, but getting it stuck on their head, so no matter where they're going, the fucking airstrike beacon is like attached to their fucking helmet, and they just stand there, and then just before the airstrike hits, they salute. I mean,
it's just goofy. There's not a lot of story. It's just focused on gameplay first, on everything else second, and I think that's a good way to go. All the pay to win stuff that most people have already debunked this, but like, honestly, the stuff you get in the non pay tier stuff is better than what you get in the pay tier.
Yeah,
it just takes longer to get. So you can get kind of a boost early by getting the premium edition, which is $60. The regular edition's $40, and then I got it for $31 on Green Man.
I bought the super. I bought the Super Citizen version of this game because I bought it right out of the gate. Like, I didn't wait to do an upgrade later. I knew this game was going to succeed, and I wanted to support them. And this is the best way for me, being the whale that I am, I guess, to support a good developer. I want to see this game succeed. And I'll tell you, like, I'm going to be critical of the game, too, because there are certain situations that, there are improvements that need to be happen, you know, need to happen to this game. And I realize it's really early on. Like, it's, you know, a lot of, you know, Helldivers was not great when it first launched either.
It wasn't great even after it launched.
Right. Well, I mean, I didn't like the top down, but they made changes to the game that I never gave it a chance, you know, never gave it another chance. This one has a lot of potential to, like, fine tune some shit. Right now, they're kind of, there's only a handful of weapons that anybody ever uses because there isn't a lot of differentiation between the weapons. Like, shotguns are great for bugs, and, you know, there's a couple other guns for the robots, right?
Yeah, the auto shotgun just rules. That's all there is to it.
What they need to do is they just need to tweak the weapons, add more kinds, and, you know, and be able to, you know, to have a little bit of diversity as far as weapons are concerned, because everybody's running around with the fucking shotgun. It's just too good. So some, you know, some tweaks there. They need to change some, like the shots per clip on some weapons to make them better. And, you know, they need to have a couple more mission types, I think, you know, would be nice. But to be fair, I've only gotten about halfway up the difficulties here, so there's probably more, you know, fun shit to happen.
Yeah, the new missions unlock the higher the tier is that you work on.
Right. So it's just like we gotta, you know, gotta actually get better at the game. There's not a clear progression. I mean, you can, you know, you can kind of get comfortable with going to a higher tier, but it's not like a piece of gear is going to open that up for you, right? We initially thought that was the case with, like, the penetration, the medium armor penetration. We were working towards that so that we can move towards, you know, higher tiers.
I mean, you always got to work towards penetration. It's ideal. You always got to work towards penetration.
Well, I mean, yes, but yes, you're correct. Always work towards penetration. But if it doesn't work out, always have a plan B.
God, but, you guys sound like Night at the Roxbury right now.
Yeah, it's been depressing because, like, we got in a match. And then my game crashed at the end of the second or the beginning of the second match. And then Rusty's game crashed at the end of the second match. And so we didn't get any of the medals or anything. So, like, we haven't played since, like, what, Wednesday?
Yeah. I mean, I popped on just for, like, a match just to see if, you know, things would, you know, were working out. And it, I mean, it seemed to be okay. I didn't get it, you know, didn't have any crashes, like, you know, late, you know, during the late week, but I didn't really fully play it. Like, there was other stuff that I wanted to do.
Speaking of other stuff though, I do want to talk about, I've got like several games to talk about cause I've just been bored that I can't play one of the best games out right now.
Speaking of other games that I know Rusty's, at least Rusty's tried, I don't remember if you played it yet or not, Justin, but Power World exceeded 25 million players.
Jesus Christ.
I've been waiting for updates.
Yeah, well, I have been waiting for more updates on Power World too, but I looked at the two between Helldivers 2 and PAL World, the launches between the two. And PAL World did have a little bit of problems, you know, initially.
Almost none.
But it was almost imperceptible. I mean, I never had any problems personally.
They immediately just said, these servers must not die, and hired professionals for $500,000 a month.
Well, I mean, if you decide that, I mean, this is like a very small team. and they said the servers must never go down. This has to stay alive. And they got, you know, 25 million players out of it. It's probably, you know, money well spent, right? Helldivers 2, on the other hand, you know, didn't have a scale solution going, you know, going up, and they didn't think that their, you know, and their backend code was having problems. So they initially started off with a very positive and then went to mixed because of the server issues, whereas Pal World never experienced that. You know, it's different approaches for, you know, for the launch. And it was something that we were talking about in the office. It's like, you know, when you go to do something, you know, when you have a software deployment like this, you have to have a plan B, a plan C, a plan D, you know, and a lot of shit, you know, basically a lot of pre-work done before it all, you know, all goes out, just to be sure that you don't experience, you know, a negative side effect from your launch, because that's an uphill battle. You have to regain your initial fucking, like, your initial goodwill. Whereas, you know, Pal World, they basically threw money at the problem and never had to deal with that, you know? So it's just a different mindset, and, you know, in having, you know, having the right plan. But I mean, both games are succeeding, so that's way more than I've ever done. Is I've never built a game, I've never made it, you know, go. So I mean, shit, they're doing better than I am. I enjoy the fuck out of both games. It's just I think both games are definitely in the it can improve and will probably improve now that they've got a massive cash influx. So
well, and it's interesting that we've had this many things to play this early in the year, honestly. Like, I thought I would not be in this, have this problem, but I am, and that's not a bad thing.
Well, that's the thing. Like, Pal World came out of fucking nowhere. And, you know, Helldivers 2, I mean, wasn't a big fan of the initial Helldivers. It was only after watching some of the videos, like the, you know, like the trailer and the initial gameplay videos of Helldivers 2, that I said, yeah, maybe this is something that I might play. But I didn't, you know, I wasn't like looking forward to that, you know, either one of these games, you know, at the early part of this year. They just kind of happened. Like Enshrouded, again, another game that just jumped out from nowhere. I enjoyed the fuck out of it, put a lot of hours into it, you know, so there's a lot of surprises and, you know, in just the first part of this year, as far as games are concerned, that, like, you know, fuck yeah, this is great. This is what I want. You know,
I wanted to say there's another surprise. Well, I wasn't surprised because I was pretty sure I'd like it. Pacific Drive, which, is sitting mostly positive, not played a lot so far. I don't know that it's doing that well right now, but to me, it's an absolute must play right now. It is a weird game, and I've put 23 hours into it in 2.5 days. It is all I've been playing after work, like till way too late at night. Pacific Drive is a sort of roguelite survival driving game, if that makes any sense, with a lot of SCP influence. So, like, imagine something like Control mixed with a survival game with some horror elements. But it's so much more than that. So you're in the Pacific Northwest in, like, I want to say an indeterminate amount of time, sometime after the 80s. And you drive into this area that's been walled off, and I guess there's been a lot of science and research done in this area, and then at some point the government just walls it off, right? You drive in and you get sucked into this vortex, and then you're in an alternate reality, so to speak, right? And the deal with the alternate realities, there's pockets of stability in this reality where nothing changes. And outside of that, everything changes. So the geometry shifts in the ground, everything. So like that's their randomization explanation so that you understand why the levels change, right? Which is how they logically get around it. So then they random gen maps, and then the story pushes you forward, but to progress in the story, you need resources, right? Because you have to get upgrades to your car to get to these different areas. And so, like, the first one's getting past, like, the level one area. And as part of that, you've got to, like, navigate through a lot of hazards to get there. A lot of, like, weird Back to the Future vibes in this game, too. But anyways, like, the gameplay loop is you go out on a run, and you kind of have in your mind, like, what materials you need to get for the upgrades that you need. And so you hit those POIs to get those materials, and then you also go and get anchors, and anchors are like these little balls of energy. The balls of energy you need for warping out of the zone, and then you also need them for upgrades. So when you bring them back, if you have a successful run, then you can use those to upgrade some blueprints, so it will upgrade your garage to help you upgrade the different components in your car or your person. Give you additional tools, additional gadgets for your car, etc. And so that gameplay loops there, right? And then the longer that you're in the game, progressing towards your final goal, you've got to open up paths. So like some of the stable things are the paths that are in the world. So like the points of interest on the big map, they stay the same. It's just the level itself changes. So you start building a roadmap by unlocking all these different points of interest, right? So that you have waypoints with your car to get further. And the further you get in the game, the more hazard it is. So the whole time that you're in the game, there's all sorts of weird electromagnetic. It's like Stalker. I think that's a better explanation. It feels more like Stalker mixed with a survival game. So you got weird radioactive anomalies that are like just floating radiation, or like there might be a poison cloud that like just hovers over the ground. Might be blades driving across the ground. There might be these like pockets of earth that just shoot up and like shoot your car into the sky. There might be these little like floating orbs that if you drive into them, they shoot you forward at like 100 miles an hour, right?
Jeez.
There's all sorts of wind storms and radiation storms and acid storms and acid blobs and little like electromagnetic robot things that are like attaching to your car. There's these floating guys that like have a like a rope with an electromagnetic or an electromagnet attached to the bottom that'll grab your car and just like chuck you off a cliff. There's these guys that'll steal shit out of your hands. Like, so there's a whole lot. And the way that you combat that is mostly avoidance. But sometimes like you have ability, like I have an electromagnetic pulse I can install in my car that drains my battery. That will, like, if I have an electromagnetic thing attached to my car, like, it'll bump it off, basically, right? But then, you know, you're crafting tools. Like, I got a vacuum for vacuuming up shit that I just broke down. I've got, like, it looks like a grinder wheel for disassembling pieces of things, right? So, like, I break apart a computer or I break apart lead panels or whatever. And this whole time, like, everything's kind of going nutso, and you've got this little, like, barometrical thing on your map that's kind of telling you, like, a loose forecast of what's going on. And you see the ping pong ball start moving really fast. You know that some kind of storm's coming, and every anchor that you pull out of the world gets more unstable. So more things show up, right? So I pull an anchor, and then a whole bunch of, like, weird phenomena shoots up around me, and then I've kind of got to avoid that to get it back to my car. One of those robots may go grab my car and like pull it forward like 100 yards, and then I got to go chasing my car while I'm holding this thing. The atmosphere in the game and the sound design is like just on point. It's always like tense, right? There's a lot of off-road driving, like trying to get point to point, trying to climb up hills with your old, it's like an old station wagon. But, like, there's all sorts of, like, things you got to do to your car, too, right? Like, I've got to repair things on my car. I've got, like, this repair pace that, like, auto-heals, but the stuff for it's kind of rare. I've got things to fix flats, right? So I've got, like, a fix-a-flat kind of thing. I've got things to repair windows because if my windows are cracked, then I'm going to have radiation seeping into my car if I'm driving through a heavily radiated area, right? my battery sometimes randomly just discharges when I go through an electromagnetic storm and I got to go jump it real quick. You get these quirks too. So like I had a quirk where every time I turned on my windshield wipers, my gas gauge just like went back and forth all over the place. There's another quirk that I had where every time that I charged the battery, all my doors opened. And you have like a JavaScript prompt, right? Like this happens, then this happens. This is the effect. Like there's four prompts. You have to diagnose those at your garage to get rid of them. And it tells you what you need or what components you need to fix that. But all those systems together are really fun, and harrowing. And when you find your last anchor and you decide, all right, then I'm going to get out of this place, like the whole world just like starts going apeshit. And then you see, like, you get your first storm, which is a radiation storm usually, and I haven't been on a high enough difficulty to see if something else happens. And then you have the red storm, which is zeroing in on you, and it goes about as just barely slower than I'm driving on a road. So if you get caught in that storm, like, your car's just, like, taking massive damage. It looks like you're in the middle of a nuclear storm, but you're driving towards this beam of light. Once you get in it, it warps you to your garage. I've only died a few times. When you die, if the condition's not set there, there'll be a tombstone there and you can get a chunk of your materials left if you can go find your car again. It does have a wonky save system, which is why a lot of people are not liking it as much. It saves on entrance to a zone and when you leave. And it saves. That's it, basically, right? So you can save and quit, and if you're at the garage, you saved and quit. If you quit in the middle of a run, it'll start the run over on that level. Now, it's pretty difficult to stay in an area for like an hour or two unless it's the very beginning areas and like the storm's not closing in. There'll be a modifier that'll say stable, like infinitely stable or something like that. And basically, no shit. Like crazy shit happens. The world doesn't end in that level unless you trigger the anchor event. So like you could spend like hours in one of those if you wanted to. But most of the time you kind of have to pick and choose what you're going to visit because you know that shit's going to go south fast. And so you kind of have to have a plan of escape quickly. One of the things I like too is that like the further you go into the zone, you'll have to hit like three or four maps to get over there. And so in those three or four maps, like the exit is just a point on the map where you drive out. And on those maps, you can run into situations, which I have before, where it gets unstable really fast. And then you have to drive through that fucking radioactive shitstorm to get to the exit, which is kind of crazy. Or you just end up having to warp out. So you'll have the anchors and then you'll find a spot to warp out, which is also that one's. I've had a couple of really harrowing moments doing that. But if you're a super OCD and you like some tension in your games and you like, if you don't mind having it, like the timer adds the tension, right? I should only get some of the things. I should not get everything unless it's infinitely stable. The other things you're going to run into out of storage in your car and in your garage too. So it doesn't matter. Then it's fine. The complaints that I've seen so far is there's been some crashing issues, which I have experienced. And there has the issue with the save system, right? Like if you're going to go on a run, you're committed to 20 or 30 minutes, just like Vampire Survivors. You can't just quit out of the middle of the run and have it save wherever your run is, right?
Right.
It does the exact same thing. It just starts you over on that run if you quit. You can abandon it, which I have before, and you come back with like missing doors, etc. There is also some cool things too. Like I unlocked the ability to auto flip my car. So there's been a couple of times that I've like rolled the fuck out of my car driving down the side of a mountain and uses up like almost all of your battery power, but it'll right side up your car and then limp yourself out to the escape point, which is what I was doing. I was like, I don't have enough time to fix this. I'll fix it in the next zone. But Pacific Drive's cool. I've been playing it through my home stereo system just because the audio is so cool. A good pair of headphones or a good stereo system is the way to play this game. Like the audio design is just impeccable. If you want to see gameplay, I think somebody who did a really good review of it, which I surprisingly didn't watch before I played it, was ACG. ACG Reviews does a lot of good stuff. He had it as like an instant buy. It's good. If any of that sounds appealing to you, it's really good. And I want to play it more than everything else I got on my list right now.
Yeah.
So I'll bounce back and forth. Jason, did you have anything new that you were playing this week?
Nope. I've just been since, you know, you guys have been playing Helldivers. I've been in the mood for a shooter, so I've just been playing Call of Duty again because lack of options at the moment.
You need to tell Crystal you need Helldivers in your life.
I know, right?
Yeah.
If you're going to buy anything, Helldivers is the thing. If you have no money for anything else, Helldivers is the thing you want to buy.
Well, it has the broadest general appeal.
It is very difficult. You can play it by yourself, but it does definitely play better with others.
Yeah, definitely. So Helldivers was such a thing that it has spread through the workplace. Everybody except for my immediate boss is playing Helldivers. So we're all like, you know, we're all using the spreading democracy and, you know, all the other shit that, you know, that is very Star Trooper-esque in that, you know, in that game. We're doing that through our team chats, and I don't know why the boss man is not buying it.
He's a gamer.
I mean, he plays games, but I don't know why he did want this one. Maybe it's because it's one of those situations where if something is so popular with everybody else.
Oh, so he's like, he's that guy that's like, oh, it's popular, so it must suck.
Yeah. Or he initially said that it was, you know, this is a fad game. This is going to, you know, it's just going to, you know, go away.
Which, so far, the fad games have been good, though. Like, Pal World was good.
Right.
And this has been good.
And he's played Pal World, so, I mean.
That's way more of a fad game than Helldivers.
Right. So, I just, like. I don't know. I think it would be, you know, it would be great to just have a team building exercise, and, you know,
you just need to see
the IT team play Helldivers.
You just got to see if it'll run on the work computers.
It can, because I'm an IT. I can make that happen. I would never play video games at work, TM. But yeah, Helldivers is definitely the game that I would recommend. I have other, you know, other games, like we were playing Deep Rock Galactic because Helldivers was being a butt. So we did actually play with Jason for, you know, a little bit, a couple rounds in Deep Rock Galactic. That was fun.
Yeah, we did some of that.
I mean, I like me some dwarves, and that game is still solid. It's not a Helldivers though. It had a different feel, but it is definitely a solid game. But the game that I've been kind of, you know, no-lifing right now is Last Epoch has done a 1.0 release. A launch for that game. And I played this game, I want to say it was about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, something like that. And it was good then. Like, it was a very solid ARPG back then. With a lot of build diversity, and a lot of really good systems. It was really good. Like, that was before Diablo 4 came out, So it was filling a niche for me because it was somewhere between, you know, it was a rung below Path of Exile as far as complexity. Right. And I wanted an ARPG that was fairly complex, but still didn't require a PhD to fucking understand. Last Epoch was definitely it. But it was definitely unfinished. Like, I played through all of what they had available for the game, and it just basically just drops off. It was like, and this is all we've got for you today. the last NPC was like, and this is the last quest that we have in the game. like, okay. Yeah, there was a little, you could go do, the end game. Like the endless end game stuff, which it does have, but at that point I was like, hey, I want to give this some more time. I want to, want them to flesh this out some more. And it's just been on the back burner because I knew I was going to go back to the game, but after Diablo 4, I was initially really, really jazzed about Diablo 4. And some of the, like, the loot drop bullshit that, that happens with, with Diablo games. It's like, but the best builds are tied behind something that has, like, a 0.00001% chance to drop. So, whatever. I needed another, ARPG in my life. Last Epoch is it. Game, I played it for about 4 hours before the launch, because Helldivers was down. I reloaded it because I knew I was going to play it. I already had the early access. I loaded it up. I played it for about 4 hours, and then I waited for 1.0. And with 1.0, they did a graphics update, and this game, it looks about as good as Diablo 4 does. The detail in the world, like once you get past like the first area, the detail in the world's really great. The lighting effects really awesome. Like the character models are a little, your character. But I'm actually enjoying the fuck out of this game right now.
It's this funny. We talked about it a little bit, but we were talking about like things that we thought would be doing well versus what isn't doing well. There are 938 players playing Suicide Squad right now.
Right, 938?
Yeah.
All-time action game.
All-time peak was 13,459 at launch.
That's nuts.
People that bought it, played through it, and then left it.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. And that's a live action game. So that game is dead.
That game is effectively dead. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. Nuts.
And by comparison, let's see, Pacific Drive, which is not a live service game.
Probably a lot.
Let's see. Why am I? I'm seeing the wrong things.
You're not searching for the right thing. I don't know, man.
Steam price history. I just want to see. It's at 22,000 users right now. No, 16,416 in-game. There are more people playing a single-player indie game than Suicide Squad.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then if you look at Last Epoch,
yeah,
which has kind of blown up, 224,000 people in-game right now. And then by comparison, Helldivers, 437,000 in-game right now.
Right. So Last Epoch actually... when it was in early access, it was kind of lukewarm. Like this is still a good game, but it had a lukewarm, like a player base that was just kind of like, it's good. I'm going to play it, but it's not like Diablo 4 big or not Path of Exile big. It's like, well, somewhere in the middle.
It was an early access title too.
Right. It was an early access title. So as most people are like, okay, early accessness, right? You know, I don't buy early access or say something like that, right? Well, 250, you know, 245, 250K, you know, users, you know, trying to hit a game, any game, is going to put some stress on, you know, infrastructure, right? Last Epoch is not immune to this. For the last, since launch, basically, online play has been kind of wonky, because the online servers are just not built to handle the amount of people trying to play online. But, and this is the big but here, Last Epoch does something that most ARPGs nowadays doesn't do. And that is to offer a completely offline mode.
Yeah, that part's nice.
If, you know, if Diablo or fucking Path of Exile had a completely offline mode, that would make all the difference. But, you know, for me, Last Epoch is one of those things that's just unique, is I can choose to play completely offline. Sure, it's a completely different set of characters. Like, I can't take my offline character online or vice versa. But if there's server issues, I can play this game completely offline. I don't even have to touch their servers, really. I can load it up and play this game without having any communication there. And that made the launch for this more successful, because if it was totally online, if this game was totally online, it'd be so shit right now. They'd be getting shit on so hard because nobody would be able to get in, play it. There's rubber banding issues online and a bunch of other shit, right? It's not a good experience. But because you have the option of playing offline, I can sit here and play with, you know, build ideas or, you know, fuck around and just have fun. And that's what I'm doing right now, is I'm just like slow playing, having fun, experiencing the game. And I'm doing it completely offline. And yeah, the offline mode has a chat, but if you can turn that shit off if you want to, it's not a big deal, right? Or you can just launch it completely offline and it doesn't even have a chat. It's got so many different options as far as being able to, you know, play it, that it's kind of saved its ass. It saved its own ass just by, you know, by having those options available at launch. Eventually online play will be, you know, the way to go, because, you know, yeah, if you look at the store page for Last Epoch, there's like different, you know, different tiers that you can buy into and have like cosmetic pets and fucking, they're doing the, you know, they're trying to do the whole Path of Exile, you know, monetization thing, which is okay-ish. It's not great because it's just cosmetics and, you know, stuff, but microtransactions definitely, you know, are built for a certain target audience, and I'm in that audience. So it's okay. Path of Exile, basically, that's how they monetize their game, because it's free to play. This is not free to play. You have to pay to play the game.
Right.
But, you know, having the option for microtransactions here is kind of an oddness, but if it helps for further development of the game, I'm okay with it, I suppose. You don't need it. Like, the game is completely playable without any type of, like, you know, microtransactions. When you play offline, you don't have access to them anyway. So if that's something that appeals to you, you know, go right ahead, play offline. You don't, you know, you won't even have the, you don't have the option to purchase it in game. You don't see them in game. The only thing that you see is a button that says cosmetics that's grayed out, and that's it. Otherwise, the entirety of the game is available to you. I am having fun. Currently playing a primalist. I am playing a primalist druid, which is focused around being a werebear. And there's different ways you could go around it. You could be a primalist druid that focuses being on a spriggan form, that's more like vines and magic based, and you know, and stuff like that. I am a lightning werebear. There's different paths that you can go down towards, you know, different builds, right? But lightning werebear is the way to go for me. Turns all of my damage into lightning damage, shocks people in place, stuns them, and basically has an infinite run. So I can charge, you know, infinitely in any direction. And when I'm charging, I am calling down lightning strikes wherever I'm going. It's really fun, watching fucking lightning hit everything in the fucking screen and then just swiping and having like big freaking, you know, electric booms happening. It's very chunky, for an ARPG, like hitting things with, as a werebear is, I mean, it feels good. There's, you know, it's not as technical. It's not as deep as Path of Exile. And I guess that makes it approachable. It has the ability to be a little deeper as you go along. But for the most part, you can look at the skill trees, and after looking at the skill tree for a minute or so, you kind of figure out what you want to do. You know, a tree, like a branch off of a particular skill gives you a, you know, like an element, or it kind of like guides you towards a build. So, there's different ways to, you know, or there's different things that you level up in this game. So your character has a level, which gives you passive, your passive abilities. So it's things like, you know, extra armor, you know, do more damage, shit like that. But as you go along, your spells or skills that you use also can be specialized. And when you put those skills and specialize them, they will level up. And they have a skill tree. So when I say my werebear is a lightning werebear, it's because I specialized werebear, and now I have the ability to make subtle changes to how werebear works, you know, through the specialization trees, which gives you a lot of different options as far as, like, you know, build capacities, different build focuses. Like, I can sit here and think of at least, you know, 10 different ways to build a werebear, or build a druid, not necessarily just werebear, but spriggan form. There's a fucking bug. What is it called? It's a swarm blade. That's what it's called, and it basically turns you into a fucking scyther from Pokemon. You know, you have a bug form with scythes for fucking hands. There's, you know, different ways to go about that. So your druid could be strength based, magic based, dex based, you know, or you could just be full on like human magic based. You could have wolves. You could have there's an item in the game that turns your wolves into rabid squirrels.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, it's fucking crazy. I mean, all the uniques are different, you know, can make things, you know, make or break different things. So, like I said, that helmet turns your wolves into squirrels. Gives you like three extra wolves, and then and then they change to squirrels and they turn into fucking little rabid bitches and they just fucking like eat everything. Yeah, there's so many different ways to build this, which makes me excited because like there's so many ways to play this game. The story is kind of But then again, ARPG stories are always kind of eh.
Yeah, they're just
trying moment to moment gameplay that's that really shines for this game. And I think they did a really good job. It's just fun as fuck to play right now.
Yeah, I'm still kind of maybe not in the right headspace, but for me I'm finding it a little bit too easy. So I'm kind of waiting for it to get hard. I guess the Necromancer class is just like maybe the way I built it's really OP, but like I can be at zero health and in like 2 seconds my health is all the way back at full.
Right.
Well, and that's without even if I'm doing that around, like if I'm doing the health leash, blood blob or something, who knows? Right. Anyways, if I do the blood draw attack, like I can basically stay in a damage zone and just hold that down and then I don't die.
Yep. There's some things that are stronger than others. That's why I went with Primalist, because it's more up in your up in the face. Like I've died probably 8-9 times.
I haven't died once yet, but I don't have as many hours in it. I think I've got about 5 or 6 hours in it.
Right. I've got like in this playthrough probably about 20.
Damn, you've been playing that hard.
A few times. There's been some hairy moments. The gameplay is, your sustain is basically health leech, which means that your potions are for oh shit moments and not necessarily for your everyday moment. You tend to take damage and then regen it as fast as you possibly can. Or in the case of, like the Necromancer, you use your health as a separate, as an additional resource to cast your spells. So some things cast from your mana pool and some things cast from your health pool. And that's why your main attack, your standard attack is a blood draw, which regens your health. As you go along, it gets a little bit harder to, you end up figuring out that some enemies will target you and not your minions, and that can add some extra shit that you have to deal with, because when you're a necromancer, you're fucking walking around in like, t-shirt and shorts, and basically you don't have any armor. So you're trying to avoid them things while having your minions beat the shit out of it and trying to stay alive. It can get kind of hairy. Especially when you've got a screen full of enemies. Like you're in the early stages of the game. You haven't really seen a lot of enemies on screen. It can overwhelm your minions on a necromancer build, so you kind of have to micromanage a little bit more.
Well, my necromancers are my minions are essentially just they just hold things in place while I just cast shit behind them, honestly.
And that's the kind of gameplay that that necromancer has. It's more of a backline thing, so you're not going to see a lot of wild fluctuations as far as your health is concerned. You're going to see things that take a lot longer for your minions to die, or things that just fucking outright you delete your goddamn minions and then you have to, resummon them. But when I was playing the Necromancer back in the early access days, they got pretty fucking OP. And it's not the most OP, that's not the most OP in the game, but as you're leveling, things are not supposed to be super duper hard. It's supposed to be a progression. And one of the things that I've noticed so far is, you know, the Acolyte, or the, you know, what you start as before you go into Necromancer, it's really easy. So if you think it's too easy, try a Primalist or try a Sentinel, which is like the sword and board. They get real fucking powerful, you know, later on, but because you don't, you know, because you're not, you know, relying on minions, you're relying on, you know, your positioning. It can change how you see the game, or do what I did. Try the mage class, because that is 100% all you all the time. And yeah, you can get your shit pushed in real quick on a fucking on a mage. But if you know what you're doing and you can set the spells up right, you can clear entire fucking screens. It's just super powerful. So there's a lot of different ways to play this game, and that is a big, big draw for me. I love me a good ARPG. And I've been kind of jonesing for, you know, another Path of Exile style, because I was into that game. Like I knew the math back in, you know, it was a few years ago. Like I was learning to, you know, to get my PhD in fucking, you know, POE. But it got to a point where I needed to take a break, or there was some other game that came out, and I was like, all right, you know, I'll just, and as soon as you don't use it, you lose it. So Path of Exile 2 comes out sometime this year too, and I'm going to give that that game a try as well, because I'm big into that. So yeah, this is going to be a good holdover until Path of Exile 2 comes out. I'm really looking forward to that one.
Yeah, I want to try out Path of Exile 2 when it finally comes out.
It's probably going to be, you know, it's probably going to be about on par as far as the complexity, but I believe that Grinding Gear Games has taken the feedback to heart over the years, that the original Path of Exile was just like, you have to look at a guide just to be able to start that game. Otherwise you're going to be woefully inadequate in that game, and it's just going to feel terrible. I think they took, you know, they're taking that into account with Path of Exile 2, and hopefully building the systems in such a way that makes it approachable in the early game and teaches you in the game how to do shit. Right now, I bet you there's a thing that you didn't even know about Path of Exile.
There's a lot of things that I didn't know.
I bet you didn't know that if you go to a vendor, and you sell a specific kind of, you know, a specific kind of gear to the vendor, you get something back. So they call it vendor crafting. You have to look it up, because I don't remember what the fuck it, you know, what the recipes are. But like, if you play that game as a speed leveler, or just like goes through that game, you have that shit memorized. There's a recipe in which you get some boots with movement speed on it, you know, like early on, and you absolutely need to have these boots. It's like a Quicksilver flask and a pair of common boots with, you know, or some bullshit. I don't remember exactly what it was, but if you sell those things, you get a pair of boots back that has movement speed on them. It's nuts. Like, it's like, that's not in the game anywhere. that was found by players, and then they just create these fucking, you know, the stuff that's online that you have to go reference. If they built that shit into the game and be like, okay, this is a thing that you can do in the game, it would make it a whole lot more approachable. So hopefully they take that and run with it for Path of Exile 2. There isn't any of that shit in this game, you know, in Last Epoch, which is one of the reasons why I feel it's a little more approachable. The crafting system in this game is really nice too. So I'll probably talk a little bit more about it on the next podcast after I've gotten to end game and play around a little bit.
Yeah, I just got to finish something. I've been playing. I got to like a point in Yakuza where I stopped for a minute, and because Helldivers came out, and I will not make the same mistake I made before. I'm just going to finish some of these other things before I play it again. I did play. I go through a couple things real quick. I did play. Well, just one thing, because I talked about my experience with the Last Epoch, but Nightingale. I'm in the camp of don't like it a lot so far.
Don't like it a lot?
Yeah, it has a lot of great systems. Like, the building's pretty cool. It's got this system where you get more materials with harder worlds, right? So you craft a card and then combine it with another card, and then that generates a level, right? I think the combat needs some work. And it wants you to go, I think the motivation to get, like, it's incredibly dense. I think that's the problem. Like, it's the densest crafting game I think I've ever played. Like, there are so many recipes for so many different things, and I just don't understand the gear progression, and it doesn't make it really obvious. And I think that part needs work. There's a lot of, like, so there's people that made Far Cry that are involved with this, people that were involved with Mass Effect are working on this, and people from Dragon Age are working on this. And the combat's what needs work, because they want you to go kill things to get a certain resource. But I don't have any interesting weapons. I have picks, axes, hammers, a carving knife. Like, all of my weapons are really basic, and I feel like I need something else. I still don't understand the enchantment system. Like, there's a whole lot of systems on systems that just aren't really well explained, and I don't understand the gear progression loop that well. And I think that's where I'm hung up. It looks good. It plays pretty good. You have to load it onto a server every time, and that part's kind of annoying. I don't know. I don't know where I sit with it. Once it clicks, maybe it's really good. But, like, I had a choice of playing that and then Pacific Drive, and Pacific Drive came out, and it just hooked me hard. Like, pretty – by the second run, I was like, I just want to keep doing this. And I didn't want to go back. Like, it took me so hard, I don't really want to play Last Epoch that much. Like, it's scratching an itch that those two games aren't. Because it grabs it. It's easier to understand quicker, right? And it introduces systems quicker. And so I'm more drawn to that. And so Nightingale, again, probably one of the best looking crafting games, right? And really good ways to design your hovel, but I'll explain like part of my frustration, right? So like, I just don't understand stuff in it. Like, it says that I can warp back to my house, and I thought I set all the systems up so that I could warp back to my house. I warped back after traveling like 2 miles away to my house on the other island that I set up. And then I had to run like 2 miles to the portal to get back to my house, which was built right next to the portal, because I didn't want to set up like a primitive shelter. Like, the food system and all that stuff is great. Like, all the food systems kind of work like Valheim. The higher quality food makes better buffs, etc., right? And you get hungry and a lot faster than some of the other games, though there's not a thirst meter, which is kind of weird. But long story short, like, it's so dense that I'm just having a hard time getting its hooks in me to figure out what to do next. And then the combat is like laughably easy. But I'm still in the early game. Like, I know there's a point where I can get like a gun, right? But so far I have a sling bow, which is like not that worth it. It's got a long reload and it doesn't do a lot of damage. Like, I just don't understand so much about this game, and it's so dense that it's just not hitting me as hard as it should. Or as it should for good game design. Like, the game design of introducing you to, like, what you need to do next and what your objectives are is kind of rough. It's kind of tedious too. So I don't know. It's kind of backburnered. I want to play more, but I would rather play Yakuza, Pacific Drive, or Last Epoch, or Helldivers before I played it again. And then when I get back into it, maybe I do get into it, but like, it's on the very furthest back burner right now, when all those other games are pretty easy to get into, with my top one being Helldivers, then Pacific Drive, then Last Epoch, and then Nightingale. Yakuza probably above most of those. But anyways, yeah, like, it's a dense game, and there's too much to learn too fast. There's a lot of ideas going on. It needs a little bit of condensing to make it a little bit more approachable. It's so much going on. And I didn't talk about it that long because I'm just not that interested in it right now, and I want to be more interested in it. I've been looking forward to that game. It's not that expensive, so there's that. Nightingale's just weird. If you're looking for a survival game that's not about base building and more about upgrades and better and cooler randomization, like, Pacific Drive's, like, fucking great.
Yeah, I'm probably going to play Pacific Drive before Nightingale. Nightingale was never on my radar, unfortunately. When you were talking about it,
there's a lot of cool
chat. I was like,
yeah, there's some cool things about it, but like, it's just, I don't know. The being tied to a server thing is weird. It's annoying the fuck out of me.
And that's one of the biggest issues with games, these days, is that it's got to be tied to a fucking server. Like, honestly, like, just give me the option to play offline, especially if there's, if there's if it's just me being having a fucking dumb moment where I just want to have, fuck, I can do that with Ark. If I want to, I could set up a dedicated server on my machine, or I don't even have to do that. I just set up a fucking solo instance on my machine. I can do that. I connect to a fucking a server on my machine. Gone, done. I can play that fucking game. Why does it have to be online? I think there's a lot of people, or a lot of people that are in the same fucking boat. Sometimes these games that look like single player experiences or could be good single player experiences, you just have to sit there and think, why does this have to connect to the internet? Why does this have to, why do I have to authenticate into the, into the game for a single player experience? And I don't mind, like, there's some things that are like, cloud saves or fucking, like, even if it's collecting information about how the game plays for patching and shit like that. I don't mind really, that kind of communication out, but why do I have to like log into a server and then honestly play the game by myself?
My Google phone listening to me. So Nightingale's releasing in offline modes very soon.
There we go. Crazy.
I'm tired of the single player experiences that you have to sign into.
Yeah, it doesn't need to happen, and that's just it's just a thing. Like, you don't need to have a authentication into the thing. I can see, like I said, just normal communication or cloud saving or something like that where it says, oh, the communication to the server is down, but you can still play the fucking game, continue on, right? Anything that basically cock blocks you away from being able to play a game that you paid for, that's not even taking into account whether or not you actually freaking finger quotes own that shit or not. Thanks, Ubisoft. It doesn't fucking matter. You paid for an experience. You're not getting that experience because fucking bad servers, right?
Right.
Which is one of the reasons, again, why I'm totally on board with Last Epoch's, offline mode, is because the online servers were fucked, but I could still play offline. Great. Give me, that means that every dollar that I put into this game, I'm still able to experience. It's just the online version of this game where I could get to see other people's fucking flashy ass gear. It has to wait until they figure out the servers. I'm okay with this.
Yeah, I am too.
So, yeah. I know that's one of the fucking things that people soapbox about. I'm no different. Like, let me fucking play the game I paid for. Back in my day, there wasn't day one patches, and you didn't have to connect to the fucking internet to play a fucking game. You put a goddamn cartridge in there, you hit the power button,
and away you went.
Sometimes it works. Maybe you flap the fucking cartridge around, blow into it a couple times, boom, done. If you went to the fucking, Blockbuster and got a fucking bunk disc that had a big ass scratch because fucking little Jimmy down the road rented it and fucking took a goddamn, screw and fucking like dug a goddamn big groove in the back of the disc, well, you're fucked. You just go back to the Blockbuster and get another one.
Well, do we want to take a break?
Yeah, otherwise I'm going to start fucking like shaking my goddamn cane here soon.
All right, guys, we'll be back. And we're back.
Ooh, yeah.
It is time for news. Oh, my God. I had to relieve myself like crazy. Rusty, you were like, I'm going to continue this thought. And I was just like, my eyes are turning yellow.
Well, I had to put my cane away, so.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, we're good. We're good. We're good. Good.
He's over there crossing his legs.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's do this. What do we got?
Huge news.
I think first on deck, some easy news. Xbox announced this last week that they will be releasing their exclusives Grounded, Pentiment, Hi-Fi Rush, and Sea of Thieves. Mm. Okay. To the Nintendo Switch and the PS5.
Oh, two mediocre games.
You can see Grounded and Sea of Thieves being a thing. I don't know how well those games would play on the Switch, but it's so. I have mixed feelings here. But this is coming from a PC player, I guess. It's more of a
Grounded's such an old game thing at this point.
Huh?
Like, I was really looking forward to that. It never really grabbed me because I didn't like the building mechanics. And it was tuned for multiplayer too, so it was
Grounded.
Yeah. It's a cool concept.
Grounded has never gotten me because of spiders. One specific thing.
Yeah, spiders.
Fuck those spiders. But yeah, Sea of Thieves also never really grabbed me because it was, it's PvP.
It got boring quick. Me and, my buddy TJ played it around with it a little bit after it got out of like its first year into season two. So we figured there'd be some things to do and it got old quick. Sailing a ship with two people is kind of not that great.
Yeah, well, that and you end up having, not because you don't have a whole lot of crew, you really can't do anything with the big ships, and
you're running around to all the different rigging points while he steers, so he's like, all right, get that sail, so I'm like grabbing the sail and trying to help us maneuver, while he's just manning the rudder, and then, like, I had to fire all the cannons, like, he just steered, right? Like,
great.
it was me running all over the deck. There was not that much to do. Land on an island and collect some gold, kill some skeletons, and go back with what we've got to buy cosmetic items. It was just boring.
Right. Well, I never really liked it because of the whole, like, you know, PvP part of it. Like, I really hate PvP games. It's just a thing. I'm so over the fucking toxic, you know, bullshit that happens with PvP that I'm just, eh. Like, there's some games that I'm okay with, like, begrudgingly okay with. Certain PvP elements.
I don't play any PvP games anymore.
Bullshit.
What's PvP that I'm playing?
Anything made from FromSoft, you know, that's fucking
unintentional PvP.
That's the only one that I'm okay with. Like, any, you know, anything that's not necessarily like the core gameplay element. Like, it happens and it's there to add basically like an unintentional adrenaline spike, because you're like, oh, I'm being invaded, fuck, this is a thing that I've got to deal with now, you know. But, and I'm not super happy with it. Like, I want to be able to play my game and not have those situational moments, but I got used to it playing through Elden Ring. Like, it didn't happen all the time in Elden Ring, but, you know, that was a thing. Like, you know, like, okay, in Elden Ring, I could just fucking, like, Sebaku and fucking be done with it, right? So,
I never really had that much trouble with it because I understood the gameplay enough. But aside from that, like, that's not PvP focused. It's PvE and then sometimes PvP.
Right. It's the games that have, you know, that's PvP heavy. Like, it was one of the reasons why I didn't, what was the other fucking, New World or whatever the fuck it was, the MMO that was on fucking
the
Amazon.
The 3080, 3090 smoker.
Yeah, the 3080, 3090 smoker. That's correct. That game, never really, you know, it's like I didn't even want to fucking touch it because it was so, like, PvP forward that I was like, eh, this is not for me.
So, something completely different. I may be the only person here that really likes HDR, but there's a new beta app for NVIDIA that will let you take SDR games and turn them into HDR games, and also having HDR support for multiple monitors as well. So it's supposed to let you take an SDR game and put it in HDR. And if you haven't, like, to, it gives you more colors to work with, right? So it's in 10-bit instead of 8-bit color. It does make a difference on the black levels and the contrast and how vibrant colors are and things like that. Like, it does look different. So I'm really curious to see, like, how it looks. Like, when you play a lot of HDR and then you go back to SDR, like, everything looks flat again to me. It just makes everything pop. So I'm curious about it. Like, I'm literally thinking about downloading it right after the podcast and trying it with Pacific Drive to see if it pops even more. I don't know. To me, it makes everything look a lot contrastier. And in certain situations with really vibrant art styles, it looks really great.
So that's fine. Like, the thing is, my ultra wide doesn't have that. Like, I am so tied to my ultra wide that
he's so tied to something he spent $1,000 on like 5 years ago.
Well, it's not the fact that I'm, you know, I got my money's worth out of it, considering I spent, you know, like,
you can get $100 monitor with HDR on it nowadays.
Right. I've played a lot of fucking games on this thing. Like, this monitor has had its day, right? But it is 1440 and it does not have HDR. I don't need 4K. I just don't. But until you see it. I prefer frame rate over, you know, visual fidelity, especially the jump between, you know, 1440 and 4K is so minimal to me.
When you're playing it on a small monitor, sure.
Right. I don't need it, but
I play everything on a 65 inch.
HDR would be great. Like, I like the, you know, the different, you know, the fidelity that you get from HDR because it's different colors, right? You know, different colors, different contrasts. I'm willing to actually pick up a new high refresh rate 1440p ultra wide monitor that has HDR on it because that would, you know, that would fit all of my needs. And you know, then I can just mount this one as a secondary monitor above it, you know.
What you need to do is get that newer Alienware sauce. Spend your next $1,000, get that OLED ultra wide with 4K and HDR.
Just get an LG.
All them deep black.
Fuck Alienware.
I don't need that.
Get
like,
LG.
I'm looking at them right now. Like a 34 inch ultra wide QHD with HDR 1440p is about $400. So that's not bad. A 49 inch ultra wide, which is way bigger than what I've got right now, is $800. Like, I got took to the cleaners when I bought this fucking thing, but it was also like the new hotness when I bought it, right?
It was early access.
Right. It was early access without the early access price. I am missing out on HDR for sure, but definitely, you know, now that you bring that up, I might actually look into that because
it's a game changer.
I'm missing out on a lot of these, this color space, right? This HDR color space. And I'm also missing out on the contrast. Like, this thing is, this Alienware that I've got here is, I put it through its paces. I think it might be time to change.
Once you go OLED or QLED, you never go back to LED anything. It's so
this will make for a really good secondary monitor once I get that, because then I'll have both of them mounted on the wall, and you know, I'll have two ultra wide set up on, you know, on my desk. It'll be great. It'll be fucking great. I think I've just talked myself into it. I'm gonna start looking around for it immediately after the podcast.
And Jason, you had some big news, right?
The other piece of news that I found, there was a leak, and then immediately a day later, release announcement for a expansion to Elden Ring called The Shadow of the Erdtree.
Now, something that is probably not a part of that story is this will be the only DLC for Elden Ring, and there will not be a sequel to Elden Ring.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this is it.
FromSoft's currently saying this is it.
Well, Miyazaki is it Miyazaki? Anyways, the guy that does all the Soul stuff, right? He said that it's the same thing he said for Dark Souls 3 after Dark Souls 3 is done with Dark Souls. So it's probably related to him using what's his face from Game of Thrones to help build the world.
Oh, fucking George R. R. Martin.
Right. Yeah. I'd imagine it's probably tied to that he had a limited license to use him as a writer for the world building and some of that stuff. And so now he's got to kind of, instead of continuing from that, he's going to have to build something completely different.
That's fine. I like Elden Ring was great the way it was. Like, I felt
it's a complete game at 160 hours all by itself.
Right, exactly.
Right. That said, both the expansion and a brand new Game of the Year edition, which includes the DLC, will be released on June 21st.
I'll be playing Elden Ring again. I'll probably do a completely new game. I'll probably be playing it all summer.
I was thinking about it. Like, there's a lot of different games that I could go back and revisit. And Elden Ring has always been one of those games that's like, okay, I could go back and revisit this. But I just remember, like, I had to get out of my own head to actually even start Elden Ring initially. And then as soon as I got into it, I knew I couldn't play any other game other than Elden Ring until I was done with it. Otherwise, I would never go back. But it made it very easy for me to only like know life that one game because of how good it was. And I also had a healthy competition with you as to whether or not I could actually beat the game before you, considering you were also like you're a Dark Souls veteran and I'm basically a Dark Souls noob. And I was able to actually, keep up at least with you, on the completion of that game.
It's the easiest of the Souls games, but
of the Souls games. And I played the easiest build. Like I played a mage. So
yeah, I played a mage too. Well, I played a paladin, which was two handed plus spells.
Right. So yeah. And you went faith based. I went magic based, and magic based was like, cast magic missiles at fucking enemies until they die.
I'll probably go like bleed based, like next time.
If I was going to play again, I wanted to play, a more melee, maybe bleed style character I felt like after playing that game, I learned something. I felt like after completing Elden Ring, I was better at games that required like timing and dodge. Like I learned a skill from playing that game. And oddly enough, like just as an example of what I've learned from Elden Ring, after completing Elden Ring, I went back to play other games that I said was too hard for me because I didn't understand how iframes work or dodging worked or anything like that. I just it wasn't there. I played Dead Cells and I fucking excelled at that game because I learned how dodging worked from Elden Ring. So just taking that into account, like I owe Elden Ring a little bit of respect because it does it did something to my gameplay and it was something that I could take into other games. It's fun shit. Like who'd have thunk it, man?
Like, who'd have thought? But I mean that's pretty big news that there's only gonna be one DLC and no others. But then again, I mean,
well, they're saying it's
FromSoft really hasn't necessarily done a whole lot of DLC for each one of their games either.
It's a good time for you to get this game now, Jason. Like, you can finally have something to play from June through November with your schedule.
There you go. Yeah, it'll take forever.
The Shadow of the Erdtree is supposed to be bigger than Limgrave, which is the biggest area in Elden Ring. In fact, it's like the first 40 hours of that game. So that's a pretty healthy chunk of content for that game, which is already a ridiculously long game. So anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm just thinking back at to the other Dark Souls games. There's really only ever been one DLC. Maybe two? Was there two for Dark Souls 2?
Yeah, there's DLC for
there was one. Two DLCs.
Two or three.
Okay.
And then had a really hard DLC that I never beat.
Yeah. It's just one of those things. Like,
I almost jumped back into it. Like, I was like, if Helldivers doesn't catch me, at least I have Dark Souls 3 to work through. And then I was just like, oh my God, Helldivers is good.
Right. Okay. Well, there's that.
The only really big thing is like, there's one really big game coming out next month, and thankfully it's closer to the end of the month. We've got Dragon's Dogma 2 coming out the 22nd, so literally 28 days away.
Oh, Jesus.
So I've got 28 days to finish everything that I got on my plate. There's the Thaumaturge, which is a narrative-based, weird... Think of, like, Supernatural in, like, Eastern Europe, and then that's, like, the TV show. But in Eastern Europe in, like, the 1500s, and then that's Thaumaturge.
Okay.
That's a very investigation-based game that's you're looking at, trying to deduce. It's kind of like the monster hunting from Witcher, and that's what it's focused on. But it's all weird Eastern European devils and demons and stuff like that.
Monster Hunter.
It's a
Monster Hunter game coming out too.
But it's super, super story-based, which I'm probably going to pick up Thaumaturge. Trying to think, is there anything else huge? No. South Park Snow Day, that's not as big as Dragon's Dogma 2. Dragon's Dogma 2 looks huge.
I'm going to play Dragon's Dogma 2. I never actually played the first one.
It's hard. And then it's got like a roguelike mode at the end that I never finished the roguelike mode, but I finished the main story. It was a pretty beefy game. And not a lot coming out in April that I see that anybody gives a shit about.
There'll be that Fallout London comes out in April.
Oh yeah, that's a mod. Yeah, that's a mod.
I mean, it's newsworthy. Just saying.
It's rumored that this is super rumor that I've been digging into for months. Fallout 4 is supposed to get like a anniversary edition, and it is rumored that it'll come out around, I think, April 11th is when the Prime TV show comes out, and so it's rumored to be coming out alongside the show to kind of build interest in it. The thing is that Bethesda's not going to do another Fallout game for a while because they've got DLC and things that they're doing with Starfield this year, and then in the next couple of years they'll be doing the Elder Scrolls 6, and so Fallout 5 is like at bare minimum 5 years out. So the closest,
I'm pretty sure
if not 10 years out,
their eggs in the basket for Elden Ring, or not Elden Ring,
Elder Scrolls. Yeah. And yep. I would guess that that's what they're working on right now is Elder Scrolls. Plus a portion of the team is working on tuning Starfield to give it more content. I'd like to play more Starfield, but I think I'm going to wait till they release the DLC this year and then revisit it and see how it plays. Not a whole lot coming out in April, but we'll have a lot of carryover into April. And then May is really super niche. Like, there's Prison Architect 2. Prison Architect 1 is a fun game. Hellblade 2, which hopefully it's longer than 5 or 6 hours. And then Homeworld 3 is coming out in May as well, which I am actually pretty excited about Homeworld 3. And then June is Elden Ring at the end of the month. And then Shin Megami Tensei Vengeance, right? And then nobody knows what's coming out, right? Like, I think Stalker's rumored to be coming out in September, as well as Space Marine 2. And I think that's the only things that we know so far. Destiny 2 is rumored to be coming out with it's called the Final Shape. And I've been reading a lot about Destiny. So, like, Destiny 2 has not been doing well in the financials. There's not a lot of people playing it. Obviously, Helldivers is beating the shit out of it right now. Mm-hmm. This DLC was rumored to come out this month, and then it got held back because they cut too many jobs, right? And so they pushed the DLC back, or the next season, or whatever we're going to call it, right, to June. And so right now it's rumored that it has to succeed. Otherwise, like, that's kind of the final nail in the coffin for Destiny 2. It's been kind of dead for over a year.
Well,
Yeah, it really has. I mean, it's Destiny's been going on since Destiny 2.
Destiny's been going on since like 2014 or something, though.
Well, they had a 10-year plan, and it's 10 years.
Correct. So,
we're
at the end of that cycle, I think.
The thing is Destiny took a really controversial, they took a controversial step by basically, content locking a bunch of shit and basically forcing people to regrind gear and shit like that with their content vault bullshit.
Never enough content to play in Destiny. Well, that's my problem with Destiny. There's never enough content. I don't want to play 5 dungeons over and over again.
That's the thing. Like, look, if you're looking at, looking at how they did the content vault, they actually took shit out of the game and
re-released
it. There wasn't enough to do in the game, so what they did was take more shit out of the game and reset everybody's weapons so that they had to regrind for their weapons again, and then they just continued to do that. Well, I had some really fucking, really great weapons that I really liked, and they content vaulted a bunch of this shit and made all of my weapons useless. At that moment, I stopped playing the game, because at that point, as like, Destiny was all about your collection of guns, right? And you just basically made me empty my vault of all of my guns because I can't use them anymore. They're no longer relevant. They don't do, the damage that they're supposed to, because you artificially raised the ceiling. And that's what killed the game. And a lot of people started dropping out. Like, I like the Destiny story, but the thing is the story only lasts for like 10 hours. So it's like, I don't know. It's always really kind of been dead. So if the final shape happens and it kind of falls on its face, I think it's time. I think it's just time to move on from that.
Well, Jason, do we have anything else?
There's not really much else out there.
Yeah, that's
So with that, guys, find us at tiltcast.com. Find us on Facebook and twitter.com/tiltcast. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/realtiltcast. And search for us on iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe.
Find some friends of the show. You've got For the Love of Gaming. You've got bmfcast.com and tvgp.tv. They do fantastic things and are your source for all things Destiny in the small podcast space. And with that, it's the end of the show.
All right. Peace.